Sure.
Yeah.
Can we make that pact right now? Let's do that. Okay, great.
All right, we'll do that. We'll play with each other's games, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. King size bed.
Right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we're here for episode number 261.
We are potentially one or zero PAX episodes away before PAX.
Yeah, it'll all depend on schedules.
Yeah, but it's fast approaching.
It is. I wonder if we're going to do a PAX, pre-PAX episode. Sometimes we do those.
Well, I mean, the things that are on the horizon, if you will, are that and Zelda. So, depending.
Yeah.
Yeah, those two things could happen before next recording time.
Let's get a king room this time, just like one giant king bed. And let's each wear like old school classic pajamas with like the hat. Like the pointy hat that everybody wears in the olden days.
Yeah, like we're Ebenezer Scrooge.
You may actually have just a king bed this time, which is something that happens to us every time. Yeah.
I hope we
have to squeeze in there.
We'll pull the blanket up to our chins and we'll be like, good night, Matt. And then I'll be like, good night, Ash. And then you'll say, good night, Scott. And he'll say, good night, Ash. And then I'll go, good night, Scott. And he'll go, good night, Matt. Like we'll do one at a time.
Yeah. Let's do that.
That'll be perfect.
This happens to us every time we go to these damn shows. It's because when you book them, you're in this like frenzy, right? And you're like, oh my God, like I got to get the room. So you click, 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 click. And it's like, God forbid you click like double bed. Like everyone's clicking double bed. So like, you just get the king bed. Who cares?
Yeah.
And then, but then you know, you try and change it out and they're like, haha, you suckers.
Well, no way. Yeah. I mean, what'll be nice though, is that you won't have to bundle up to go to the show. You know, it's just a short walk and we're there. So it'll be super chill, you know?
Yeah, it's not going to be cold either.
It'll be pretty warm.
No, is it?
I thought it's going to be like 40 or something.
Yeah, warm.
Oh, warm. Oh, yeah.
Mr. No longer a Floridian. Okay.
Yeah, this guy.
Dude, I was in a light jacket today. It was like in the 40s. And
this guy.
And that was great.
I'll be wearing like a whole like Inuit costume in the 40s. Hey, they'll be like, Ash, are you in cosplay? You're like, no, this is just what I wear in cold weather.
You're not Overwatch May cosplaying.
Cosplaying as Never Alone. Great. Yeah.
That'd be amazing. So what's on this week's show, Scott?
Oh yeah. Sorry. I was like, I changed the show notes and I'm looking at them and I'm thinking like, what are we supposed to do now? But this part doesn't change, which is
dude, this is episode 261.
Yeah, I know. But like I have these conversations in my brain about like how I want to change the format of the show. And so sometimes it kind of leaks out. But anyways, I think probably the thing that most of us did this weekend is we played the Ghost Recon Wildlands beta. So we'll talk about that. I played a game called The Inner World, which is a 2D hand-drawn point and click adventure, which is super cool. So I'll tell you guys about that in the reviews, and then we'll catch up, of course. And then we'll just get to a little bit of news about some leaked games and Mass Effect Andromeda news, which we will talk about probably every week until the game comes out, which I'm really excited about. So
soon.
Huh? So soon.
So soon.
Yeah, very soon.
So soon. Very soon. It's going to be like 2 weeks after PAX, which is just insane.
Not just that, it'll be the week you get back. I think that Thursday is when the early access starts. Am I not? Or is there another week in between?
It's probably the week we get back. Yeah.
Yes.
And they're having a huge panel at PAX too on the main stage. So they have to be announcing something there or else they wouldn't bother doing it just a couple weeks.
The week you get back, I think the Thursday following is when EA access trial starts for was either going to be like 5 or 10 hours. Right. So we'll get to get to a little bit of that at that time. So that'll be really exciting.
It is super exciting.
This week, I thought we would do some Audible picks, which we haven't done in a while.
Sure.
Yeah, sounds good. So everybody knows what Audible is. It's, you know, you can get audiobooks. They are sort of a sponsor of the show as well. You can get a free audiobook for new subscribers at audibletrial.com/ratedNA. And then with that free audiobook, you can cancel anytime. So if you decide you don't like it, you can still get a free audiobook. But I've been subscribing this whole time and I've checked out a bunch of different things. I tend to listen to like some autobiographies and then just kind of pick up some random stuff along the way. And then it's mostly Star Wars after that. But right now I'm listening to the audiobook version of Rogue One, which is really interesting because, you know, movies are a visual medium, obviously. And so with an audiobook, what you get from that is you get to kind of hear more about what the characters are thinking while they're performing some of those action sequences, which is neat. And then there's kind of a, you know, there's a little, almost like, it's not like an Easter egg or anything, but you know, when Jyn Erso first says that rebellions are built on hope, there's a little bit of context behind that, that you get in the book. And I was just like, oh, you know, she, you know, it's, I think at the point in the film where she said that the audiobook narrator made a mention of how she was thinking back to something that like Saw Gerrera would say. And so, I think that something that you miss from the movie is that like she is constantly kind of like reflecting back on her time with him, as she's doing the various things throughout the film, which is really interesting. And there's a lot of stuff like that, especially, in the action sequences, towards the end of the book. So that is my Audible pick. And, I also picked up the third audiobook in the Aftermath trilogy for Star Wars, which I don't remember the name.
Is it called Empire's End?
I think it is Empire's End. That's the one.
I actually just picked that up too.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to kind of hang with all of these new canon books. The first Aftermath book was not great in my opinion. The second one I thought was much improved over the first. So I'm definitely willing to give the third one a try. It definitely has that sort of ensemble cast vibe, the same way that, like, you know, Patrick Week's Palace Job has, where it's like you meet a bunch of characters and they kind of all have different personalities and they grow on you and they kind of interact with each other in interesting ways. So that's kind of the angle there. So I'm interested just to see.
The cool thing about Empire's End also is that it's, you know, when you see episode 7, you know, takes place on Jakku. And there was a massive battle on Jakku, which was the Empire's last stand. And that's what the book is all about, Last Stand.
Awesome.
So you get to kind of see what exactly happens and what leads them to having, like, why at this horrible desert planet in the middle of nowhere? Like, why would the Empire bother fighting there? So you get to learn a lot about the battle itself and kind of how the Empire end up getting their asses kicked. So it's more of a war book than the rest from what I've been reading, so...
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that then. And then
if you're into that, then it's cool.
Yeah. And then my last pick, I don't know if you need to be a subscriber to get this, but, and I don't even know if it's available anymore. And I've mentioned it before, but there was an audiobook that was available for free for a while, called The Dispatcher. And it's like a short audiobook, but it's narrated by Zachary Quinto, right? That's his name. How you say his name?
Yeah.
Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
The thing is that he is a fantastic narrator and has only narrated like this book and has been part of an ensemble narration cast for something else. But
yeah, really? he was the Oscars commercial for Audible.
Oh, wow.
It's him narrating.
He is awesome because he kind of reads, his like tempo for reading is one that I've not heard from other readers before. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like the way he reads some characters is almost like flippant in a way, which is really cool. So but anyways, I think the more important thing is the story, which is really good. And the book was written by I think the same author who wrote Old Man's War and a bunch of other like really popular novels in that vein. So that book is called The Dispatcher. So that's three picks for Audible. And so if you want to help support the show and get a free audio book download in the process, you can go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA and get signed up with your Amazon account.
Cool.
Do it.
How about we talk to Matt?
Sure.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Not too much. We had a friend in town over the weekend, so I did a little bit of entertaining. I don't think we did anything super, super crazy. We kind of just take people out to eat and stuff. We're not really like a high action couple to hang out with. So, did that, played some Ghost Recon, played some more of a space game on my phone.
the space game.
I believe I'm higher level than you, Ash. So
you might be.
Eat it.
It's okay. I get paid to play, so.
Played some more Forza, which is still fantastic. I think Melissa got me gift certificates for Christmas for Xbox, and I haven't used them yet. And I think I'm actually going to get the Blizzard Mountain. I'm enjoying it.
I'm jealous. That's exciting.
I might pick that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me know if you do. Maybe I'll play it with you for the next 4 days.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested to see what it is. I might pick it up. And then watch the Oscars, which was pretty fun.
Any thoughts on that? I didn't watch it. Ash, did you watch it?
I watched the first maybe hour and then had to take care of the kids, so I had to abandon the Oscars. But I missed the good part, apparently.
Oh, the mix-up at the end?
Yeah, I hear that.
It was
like
crazy.
The most awkward thing ever.
It could have been, I think, way worse, but to his credit, the producer for La La Land, so essentially what happened, if somehow you live under a rock, they got I actually read an article on how it happened today. It was pretty interesting. They have two people holding identical cards on the left and the right of stage. That way, whatever side the person might come out from, they have the card, they can hand it to them. Well, the person who introduced the winner for Best Actress, which ended up being Emma Stone, was on the left side of the stage, gave the card to, Leo DiCaprio. And he walks out, he reads the thing. Well, next comes Warren Beatty and
Faye Dunaway,
and they came from the right, and apparently the person holding the card handed them the same card that had just been handed out, as opposed to handing the correct card, which was the best picture. So they came out with that card, announced it, opened it. The card said Emma Stone, La La Land. And according to Warren Beatty, that's why he like paused and stared at it for a while. Cause he was like, why does it say Emma Stone? Apparently. Yeah.
Okay.
And he was a little confused. And then Faye Dunaway just saw La La Land. So he kind of like showed it to her. And then she just went La La Land. So the whole cast, you know, the producers and everybody come up from La La Land, and like immediate, we were watching with a few friends and we were like, kind of like, oh, whatever, you know, La La Land won. And then I was like, wait, something's going on. Cause you could see like motion and people kept looking to the left, like looking away from the camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you see like stage managers with mics out there. And then the producer from La La Land walks back up to the mic and says, this isn't a joke. I know this is going to sound like a joke. It's not a joke. We didn't win. Moonlight won. And he was like, he said something really kind of thoughtful in the moment, which is kind of crazy. But he said, it was something along the lines of like, we've been doing the festival circuit with these guys this whole time. It does nothing but honor me to be able to hand this award to them. They're great, like kind of thing. And
oh,
then
cool.
they came up and got the award. So it could have been like, and then Kimmel came up and Beatty came up and they were all kind of like talking about on the mic for a second about what happened. And then Moonlight got to like give a big acceptance speech and accept the award. But it could have been like, it wasn't that it was awkward. It was more just that it was like a clusterfuck. Like there was just so much, there was like a flurry of action going on stage. So it was kind of hard to,
it's crazy. It's
to know crazy. What was going on.
It's amazing how that can happen in this day and age.
Yeah. So
that like human
just
error.
Put it on the teleprompter, you know, like what in the heck? Like,
yeah.
Are we not, like, I know it's a well-guarded secret, but at this point you need like a backup plan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like does what in your hand match what is on that screen right there?
Yeah. Well, apparently I don't think it was on this, or I don't know, whatever, who knows.
It's only on the card, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's only on the card. I don't think they have it on teleprompter too. The rest of it was okay. Kimmel was fine. He did some funny stuff. There's kerfuffles you can read about online about him making fun of names and stuff, which is just dumb Kimmel jokes. He did a bit that was pretty funny where he took a tour bus and brought them to the Oscars and then walked them through the Oscars. Which was humorous, to say the least. They're like taking pictures with Ryan Gosling and stuff, and Denzel got up and married a couple, like all on the fly, pretty clearly. None of this was pre-planned whatsoever.
That's awesome.
How weird.
So that was pretty funny. It was fine. You know, overall, it was entertaining-ish, I guess. I haven't actually seen, I have a bunch of them queued up to watch, but I haven't seen any of the pictures. So
that's what I was telling my wife, like, I was like, this is the first year where I haven't seen like any of these. I felt terrible, but it's like, yeah, you know, I also haven't gone to the movies at all this year. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, I really wanted to see Moonlight and I never made it out. I wanted to see Arrival and never made it out. I've actually heard really great things about Hell or High Water, which was that Chris Pine like bank heist movie.
I was interested. So whatever, I'll watch Hidden Figures, or was that last year?
Yeah, Hidden Figures looks good. Uh-huh. Even Fences look good. Like the Denzel, Denzel can act, so you know, watching him do anything is kind of interesting. It's a story that I'm not really familiar with. And then La La Land, I'm not a musical guy, so I don't really care about it. I'll watch it at some point, but I don't really. It's just not my bag.
Right.
But yeah, that was pretty much it. Pretty light week. So Ash, how about you?
Also a pretty light week. I spent a decent amount of time playing Ghost Recon Wildlands. My wife, who surprisingly was on the last episode, she did the Disney half marathon this weekend, so I had the kid all weekend, so I didn't get a chance to play as much as I would have liked. But
she had the runs this weekend, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, she had literally the runs.
Yeah,
but she survived, and I survived having the kid for a while, which was fun. I liked Ghost Recon Wildlands, but I guess we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth in the review section.
Yeah.
Co-op is definitely cool. I checked out the show Powerless at your guys' request, and I watched actually all of them that have aired, so I think 4 episodes so far.
I'm surprised you weren't watching it already. Like, that was the shocking thing.
Well, it was one of those that kind of snuck past me, because this was one of the years where I only picked a handful of shows to kind of add to my queue of shows that I watched, just because mm-hmm. there were a lot of procedurals and not a lot of things that looked like really intriguing to me.
Yeah, agreed.
And plus it was like, at this point I watched like all the damn CW shows on the planet, so I have like, you know, 3 shows I have to watch like every night, so it's kind of bizarre.
I have actually not watched this either. Only Scott has.
Oh,
I didn't recommend this at all. Yeah,
I think you'd really so like surprised. It. Like, yeah, we were talking like right before you got on that the pilot's a little like not the best thing ever, but the like once you get to episode 3 and 4, it gets really, really good. Yeah. I feel like a lot of this show is just like Alan Tudyk improv,
right?
which is fine because he's absolutely hilarious. But I think the whole cast is pretty great once they're sort of a little bit more comfortable with their roles.
It's like AV Club, or somebody has a theory that this is in the same universe as Gotham. That like this is like post Gotham world is Powerless.
Oh jeez. Weird. Well, the thing I do like about it, just to talk about it briefly, is it's a completely like ridiculous and comedic take on the DC universe, but the town they live in is kind of like
Charm City.
Not Gotham. Yeah, it's not Gotham. It's not Metropolis. But so they have like D tier heroes and stuff in the town. It's funny because they have who do they have? Oh, what the hell was his name?
Are they real DC villains?
They're real DC heroes and villains, but they're like
they were just making these characters.
No, I thought they were made up too, but I had to go and look them up because I had never heard of them because I'm not a huge DC guy. But they're actually characters from DC that have been around forever, but they're like so low on the tier that the people that show up in the show, like superhero action
level or something, or
like it's like booster lower goal? Than that.
They're really
it's
not like, even part of the show. Like they basically serve to like provide context for the city that they live in, and so you know, people will be standing outside ordering hot dogs at a hot dog cart, and a villain will fly by and like blow up a car, and everyone will be like huh, and then just kind of go about their business because they're so used to it. That's kind of the
The whole shtick. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and there's definitely references to Batman and Aquaman and you know all the big A-tier characters, and they talk about Bruce Wayne all the time because the you know Alan Tudyk's character is his cousin, so it's interesting and it's funny and it's weird. But I think the thing, not now I'm sort of reviewing it, but the thing that's weird about it is that DC is so confused as to what it wants its identity to be that all these different properties exist all over the place and none of them have any sort of cohesion or unity. So it's like you have like their cinematic universe, which a lot of people would say is a total mess. Then you have their TV CW universe, the Berlanti universe, which actually is its own thing and it's pretty cool. And then you have this and that completely exists sort of on its own, and Gotham exists on its own. And it's like, I don't know, maybe the Marvel Cinematic Universe has spoiled me, but having all these different, it was like the problem Scott had, like where he was like, right. Wait, I watched Gotham, but the same thing's not happening in these other shows. It's like completely different.
I played Telltale Batman while watching Gotham at the same time. Right. And it was the most confusing thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think a lot of other, you know, consumers, a lot of other viewers are probably confused about it too. Like, is it supposed to be funny? Is it supposed to be deadly serious? Like,
I think that's the thing, right? Like, it's like the tone. It's not so much like whether the characters cross over or whether that you can follow a story from one to the other. Because if you watch, like, you know, Daredevil and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, while people show up in the show, it's not like they're not directly tied in any like very serious way, right? It's like passing mentions and things like that,
right?
But tonally they all fit perfectly, and even those shows fit with like the movies in a way, you know, like the movies may each have their own little feel, but it's like tonally the same universe. And I think that's what DC just cannot, like you said, just can't figure out. It's like goofy, serious, dark, like it's just all over the
right
map.
Right. And yeah. A lot of people may not matter to them, but to me it kind of does. Like, I just love, mentally I love the idea that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is all, you know, very, very loosely at this point connected. So when we get the Cloak and Dagger show, when we get the Defenders, like, I can in the back of my head go, oh, well, this is all happening in the same, you know, the same fake universe. Yeah. Like, whereas all these DC properties all exist on their own, which is just, you know, kind of a shame. But anyway, Powerless is good. I liked it.
Yeah, there was one other thing.
Check it out.
I was going to ask you about this. I don't know if you noticed it, but the cinematography, they do something kind of interesting with Vanessa Hudgens. And I feel like they do a lot of shots where she's like completely centered in frame and she kind of like walks directly up to the camera, almost like she's doing a superhero pose, you know, like if you were to see a superhero put their fists on their hips, like in a comic book.
Right. Right.
She kind of like strikes a lot of those, like, you know, superhero poses.
I did not notice that. I think she's great in it too. She kind of, in the first couple episodes, she sort of is playing like a Monica from Friends type character. And then that kind of fades away.
But
like,
I mean,
nobody likes to watch that, like, that be the main character in shows. And I feel like they keep making like Monicas in all of these shows. What was that show, Married, that came out? Was it called Married? With
I don't remember.
With God, my brain's putty right now. I'll think of it later. But anyway,
okay.
So that type of character, I feel like, just isn't all that appealing. So,
well, I think anyone that's on the fence about this, I think you really have to get to episode 3, because that's the first episode in which I thought that all of the characters were kind of cohesive and working together and had like more of a rapport than episodes 1 and 2, which were kind of like, it felt like they were kind of like all out of sync with one another. But episode 3, I thought, like, probably had the best relationships between all the characters and probably the best like storyline as far as like what happened in that episode. So I thought, definitely stick with it till the third one, and then I don't know, I hope it gets picked up for a while, because
I do too.
Has a lot of potential. Yep.
I dug it. Scott, what about you?
I spent most of this week playing reviewing The Inner World, which is a 2D point and click adventure for Xbox that just came out. Or actually, it's not coming out until I think closer to the end of March, but I'll talk about that in a little bit. I played the Ghost Recon beta. Ash and I played a little bit together, so we can talk about that later. Like we were saying, I got caught up on Powerless, and then I wanted to tell you guys quickly about The Ultimate Beastmaster. Are you familiar with this?
Netflix's American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, it's basically like it's if Sylvester Stallone was the, you know, the EP for Ninja Warrior. That's, you would get The Ultimate Beastmaster.
Oh man!
So
is he on camera at all for this, or
just at the, like, for the first 2 minutes of it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they basically take a Ninja Warrior course and build this like gigantic metal beast around it and make all of the obstacles like themed on the parts of the beast.
Yeah.
And I thought they did something really clever with the construction of this show, because they invite 2 athletes from 6 different countries to participate in the show. And then, you know, the person that does the best each week will go into like a final round. But the point is that unlike, you know, what you see on Ninja Warrior, they actually have, 2 co-hosts from each of the 6 countries. So pretty much no matter which of those 6 countries the show is airing in, you'll get to see probably a slightly different version of the show, which I thought was like genius.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So like, you know, for us, it's Terry Crews and, I think someone who's like hosted, someone is like a sports host from like Fox Sports One or something like that. So, so it's Terry Crews and this other woman. And then, each of the other countries have different, co-hosts, which, you know, they cut to them occasionally and do translations and stuff like that when they're doing something funny, but it definitely keeps everything going. Like when the US co-hosts don't have anything interesting to say, you can go to the other co-hosts and then, they kind of interact with one another. But other than that, it's just a obstacle course competition show. And I just thought it was funny, to bring it up because, you know, Sylvester Stallone is in the first like 5 minutes of it. And I was like, oh, okay, like this is ridiculous. They scored on, you know, based on points too. So it's not like, can you even complete the course? It's like, you get points for each obstacle you pass. And so there's going to be a winner every week, but, it's pretty cool. It's a thing you can watch. So that's pretty much it.
It's got a great name too.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of absurd and it's Terry Crews. And so, you know,
gotta love him.
When you just need to put something on in the background while you're doing something else, you can put on Ultimate Beastmaster.
News.
So this is exciting news. Shadow of Mordor 2 got leaked by the Target people at Target, undoubtedly causing the WDP marketing staff to go absolutely insane and probably jump out a couple windows. But then the next day they're like, you know what, we're just gonna put out the trailer and release a whole bunch of information. And it looks like the Shadow of Mordor 2, which is called Shadow of War, right? Is that what it's called? I believe.
Yep, that sounds right.
Is coming out in August, which is very soon. So we're getting new trailers soon on top of the trailer we just got. And it's looking pretty awesome. It looks like Sauron's back. And it looks like, did you guys watch the trailer that came out?
No, I did.
No, I still need to play the first one, to be honest with you.
Oh, man.
I know.
You would absolutely love it. I think you would absolutely love it.
I have it. It's ready to go. I'm just got to start playing it.
It's like, yeah, it's like one of those Wolf Among Us type situations, huh?
It really is. It really is. It fits into that category. So,
Yeah, go ahead. Go back.
It's just such a, it's like, you know, if I like it, it's one of those games that's just like easy to sit down and play for 30 minutes and then put away and like step away from.
Yeah.
Well, like it does not require endless attention to story and what's going on. It's just kind of like, did you kill some orcs?
Yeah.
Like, good job. You know, I mean, that's kind of,
I think we were talking about this game, like you guys kind of brought it up to me around the time we were talking about like the various Assassin's Creeds that had come out most recently. And I know, because we talked a lot about the combat, like the quality of the combat in that game, like being like kind of like approaching like a Batman level of quality. So I think that was the reason why, why we brought it up originally. So so we're gonna get a sequel, which is good stuff. But apparently there's already like DLC for sale, and there's a $300 edition that's floating around out there. So
Kind of liking this new, I feel like this type of marketing was done originally, not originally, maybe not originally, but Bethesda did it with the last Fallout, where they're just kind of like, hey, there's a new Fallout, it's coming out in like 2 months, get ready. And it's like, oh shit, like I really appreciate this more than teasing a game like years out.
I mean, it just doesn't work, you know. I mean, just think, I keep thinking back to the, like, what everyone said was like the coolest E3 presentation ever, which was like Sony's briefing from last year,
right?
And I think of the six, you know, AAA titles that they showed, I think only one of them is available, like even something you can pre-order at this point, which comes out tomorrow. So and maybe Resident Evil, but like they showed a bunch of other stuff that's like at this point is vaporware, right? So
it's weird how that happens, huh? I mean, but so much can happen during the development cycle. I mean, just look at things like Cuphead, which have been poised to come out for
Scalebound, you know, canceled.
Scalebound, oh, canceled, Cuphead, right?
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah,
Cuphead's
about
still not out,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like stuff like that shows up. You know, it's console platform agnostic. It happens everywhere. But like you said, I kind of appreciate that too, where it's just like, hey, this game is coming out and you can buy it now. Like that's really what I'm interested in. Like, how much does it cost? Yeah. When can I buy it? Like, just let me know. I want the facts.
So yeah, even if this wasn't their marketing strategy initially, I think it's a pretty good one. You know, they might have been waiting for, you know, maybe PAX or E3 or something to announce it, probably. But now it's like, well, thanks to Target, just like putting up the box art.
Womp womp.
It's like, oopsie. That's ridiculous. But that's good news. I'm excited for the game. It does look like Nemesis System is back. continuation of the original plot with some of the same characters, which is cool.
Yeah.
And looks like bigger, badder. They showed a Balrog, which is gorgeous looking. So
yeah, that'll be crazy if you fight that.
I'm sure we'll get Balrogs, which is just cool, man. It's gonna be great.
Nice.
Let's look at the Dice Awards.
Yeah, I thought we'd just talk about the Dice Awards quickly, since it's kind of like a what appears to be a high profile event as far as Game Award shows go. But you know, the two biggest winners clearly were Overwatch and Inside, which is the title from Playdead, makers of Limbo, previous game.
Yeah.
Some other titles of interest include Racing Game of the Year, Forza Horizon 3.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
And then
Uncharted 4 got a couple of awards for Adventure Game of the Year, Technical Achievement, Story, Writing. I think, Uncharted 4 got like 4 awards. Inside got, I think, 3. I think Overwatch got 3, including Game of the Year. And so that's pretty cool. I've recommended Inside on this program many times, and I don't have a PS4, but I'd really like to play Uncharted 4. Either of you play it? Ash, did you play it?
I have only played not Uncharted 4. I think I played like half of Uncharted 2. I think all of the Uncharted I've ever played. Yeah,
I was going to say, I started Uncharted 1 3 years ago, and I have not played.
Uncharted fans probably want to choke us right now.
Well, I've played all 3. 1 is a little rough. It's kind of like going from Uncharted 1 to 2 is kind of like going from Mass Effect 1 to 2, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sort of the gameplay improvements to 2 were so great. They added, you know, a cover mechanic, and the shooting was a little easier to handle and things like that. Right. And then, I don't know, I kind of feel like of that series, 2 is my favorite. I have not played 4. 3 kind of felt like a little more of the same and maybe too much of it, but... still a great series. I mean, that being said, it's like obviously all 3 are fantastic, but so it's nice to see you know, those kinds of games getting attention, especially Inside. Like I personally thought it was good. Apparently other people thought it was good too, so that's like, as far as, you know, Shadows and Wolf Among Us go, I'd put this on both of your lists as the need to play for
Inside.
Because I want to talk to you guys about it, and I have not been able to do that up until this point, so need you to finish the game so we can talk about it.
I'd love to talk to you about Wolf Among Us. So
yeah,
I
feel you. I know
want to talk to Ash about The Expanse, but you know, there's just things I can't talk about on this show, so it's fine.
Maybe sometime this summer we'll set up a week where we'll all do one thing. We'll play, watch one thing for the other person so that we can all actually have those discussions, like over the summer where it's like quiet, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Can we make that pact right now? Let's do that. Okay, great.
All right. We'll do that. We'll play with each other's games, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. King size bed.
So the other little tiny bit of news is it kind of harkens back to what we were just talking about with Dice, but Overwatch is teasing a new hero that should be dropping within the next couple of weeks. And I just think the way that they're going about it is pretty genius. They've kind of announced their heroes differently every single time. And it's a big deal. At this point, Overwatch has sold over 25 million copies. So it's one of those games that's just wildly popular. And that pisses some people off. Like, I know a lot of people were upset that a multiplayer only action game ended up winning Game of the Year, and they're like, how could this, you know, with all these games with great narratives, how could this end up winning? I think the way that they do everything is one of the reasons why it is as popular as it is. So right now they're getting ready to announce a new hero, and rather than just saying like, hey, here's a hero, they're doing these sort of like very meta press releases from the perspective of different characters within the universe. So they have this young girl named Effie Oladele, who is from the fictitious place Numbani in the Overwatch universe. And she's like this child prodigy who's 11 years old. And she witnesses this sort of this crime happen, and she gets inspired, and she's a genius who like won all this grant money and stuff. And she gets inspired to build a robot. And so we've been getting messages from the social accounts associated with Overwatch about her gearing up to build this robot. And they're all very like sneaky and teasy, and each one's kind of like revealing little tiny bits of a puzzle. And so within the next couple weeks, we may get a new hero, or at least a reveal of some sort. But it is it's really interesting just the way they go about doing it. And I think one of the things that's kind of cool and frustrating is they don't Blizzard, or at least the Overwatch team, doesn't really communicate directly with press. Like press, to my knowledge, they don't get anything ahead of time before the public, which is cool, but it's like we never get press releases from them about like what's about to happen. It's just like literally the same time as everybody else. They kind of let the community. They don't, right? Yeah. And I think it's a testament to how the industry is really changing, right? And you know, right now it's like people don't really need gaming press to spread information anymore, because the information just spreads so rapidly, you know, over Reddit and over social media, that it's like it's almost you know, rather than the review, like the review score, which actually does push the sales of games, like, you know, having news outlets know about this content early is just going to lead to leaks. So it's like they just don't do it anymore, mm-hmm. which I think is pretty great. So that's pretty much it. Everyone thought that the next hero was going to be Terry Crews' Doomfist, but apparently it's not going to be Doomfist. It's going to be some new robotic character, but it'll probably be revealed by the time this comes out. So keep your eyes peeled for new Overwatch characters.
I feel like Overwatch has kind of taken on that Trent Reznor quality that he had back in the day, where it's like he could release like 25 minutes of him, you know, pooping into a trash can and everybody would be like, this is amazing. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
You kind of wield that power. Now you can just do whatever you want. And with that large of a player base, you can kind of get clever with your marketing and everyone will pay attention. You know, someone will figure it out and spread the news. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Other bit of information is just a little bit of stuff about Mass Effect Andromeda. We talked about on last week's show how the press had an opportunity to play the game a while back out at the Redwood Shores studio. And a lot of the reports are available from, you know, A-tier press outlets about their I think they had between 3 to 6 hours with the game. And the majority of the reviews were pretty positive. Apparently the game, you know, still has a couple bugs here and there, or at least it did with the build that they showed press. But things looked really good. A lot of people were really, really stoked on what they played, which is great to hear, because you know how press can be. They can be pretty, pretty brutal, especially when, you know, the first Mass Effect trilogy is so loved. A little bit of extra info that happened between that report and this week is that they have gone on record saying that there is going to be full nudity in this new Mass Effect Andromeda. So they kind of did it, and they did it in Inquisition, and I was like absolutely shocked when I got to like finally, you know, get with my lady in Inquisition. I was like, oh, there's her private parts. I was not expecting that. And now we're gonna get that new Andromeda.
To load my save game again.
Xbox, record that. I think this is good. I love the fact that we are getting more adult titles. Like, you know, if you're gonna rate something M for mature and you can blow up people's body parts and beat people to death with limbs, then I think showing like a butt cheek is probably okay.
Absolutely.
I don't mind this in this, you know, in this franchise, which is meant for adults. I think it's a good move, especially since, you know, the romances are such a popular thing in the Mass Effect franchise. So what do you guys think about this?
I mean, I think it's fine. I think it's, they're basically just trying to have a more robust story and narrative and more realistic world. And that's, I mean, this is obviously just one very small aspect of a very gigantic game. And so,
right.
You know, I think the comment that was made was sort of made in jest, even though it was true. And so, you know, like, I wouldn't read into it too much. There are some people that I know will play this game and have no interest in romancing anybody, and then people that will play this game and only have an interest in doing that. And that's what makes a game like Mass Effect so great, is that it has there are so many different aspects to the game that there's something in there that caters to everyone. And so you can kind of get into whatever part of the game you want. I mean, like, before 3 came out, I wanted nothing to do with multiplayer, and now that's really like all I can think about right now when this new game is coming out, is that I just want to get in there with you guys and other people in our community.
I actually remember having those conversations with you. You were like legit.
You were pissed. So against it.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I'm totally insane. And I'm owning up to it. Like, I ate a lot of crow for that. I thought it was going to be awful because I think I was really burned out on competitive,
right?
You know, PvP, and then this game came out and made me realize that co-op is the way to go and multiplayer can be fun again, especially when you play with friends. And so, yeah, really turned the corner. So, absolutely, if you're into single player combat, you can do that. Customizing, you can do that. Narrative, they have that, and then romance as well. So I think it's just a testament to everything that they've packed into the game.
Yeah.
I concur.
Ash, we were talking offline. You said that you started watching a bunch of videos, and I seem to remember this happened with Mass Effect 3 too, where we were all holding out as long as we could without watching anything because we knew we were going to buy the game anyways. And now what are right. we like? We're like 2 weeks away, 2.5 weeks away, and like the dam has broken.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not watching anything with any narrative stuff though. So I'm basically, the videos I'm watching are just recutting all of the trailers that have been released and talking over them about, you know, their experience. Mm-hmm. But what BioWare did, I think, is really smart. They let them kind of see the intro, and they let them play around with the game systems and play around with combat, and then they jumped them forward in the storyline quite a bit. So they didn't really get a feel for what was going to happen in the story. So it made it so the press really couldn't spoil much. And the good news is I did watch a lot of videos, and the press really, I don't know anything about the plot beyond what's been released in the trailers. So, yeah, I'm glad I haven't really learned too much, but it's, you know, it's cool. I feel like the difference between now and when Mass Effect 3 came out is I feel like information goes to YouTube now instantaneously. Mm-hmm. So like there are sites just dedicated to like every little drop of Mass Effect Andromeda news, and they'll have a YouTube video up within 5 minutes of like the trailer being released, and you can kind of
down like individual frames like in the video. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the type of idiot that watches those, so
yeah. You know what was really effective for me, at least, was like, I still go back and watch it because I think it's so cool, is I really like that live action trailer that they, well, you know, the live animated one they released for Mass 3, where it's like the one where the, you know, the little girl's flying the replica spaceship.
Oh, right, yeah.
The Reapers.
It was the guy that did the Halo ones or whatever.
Yeah, like, I still watch that because it's like, it just, I feel like it perfectly amps you up for what the game is. And it's like, you know, that moment where Shepard hops off with Ashley, or I think it's Ashley in both videos, but she hops off with Ashley and then she kind of pulls out her rifle, and the rifle kind of does like a mini transform to expand, you know?
Yeah.
And then
that was good.
The trailer ends with her like with the Omni blade, like on the, what the hell was that large, creature from Mass 3, the big one, the one that would always chase us around the map in multiplayer. But anyways, that's how that trailer ended. And I'm still like hyped up for that one, but I feel like there hasn't really been is there like a singular cohesive release trailer for Andromeda yet? I don't think there is, right? It's kind of just like bits and pieces. There's like, you know, a focus on combat, and then there's the Andromeda Initiative, which still isn't complete. There's still two more episodes of that to go. So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting technique this time around.
It's interesting. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's all coming in very hot. Yes. And of course I have no perspective, but I feel like, you know, I've been saying forever, like on record, I'm like, there's no way this game is actually coming out in March.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to, cause it's definitely coming out now, but I said on this show, I'm like, there's just no way. Cause such little information, you know, has been released about Mass Effect.
Yeah. And that Beacon account is completely silent since they first announced it. So I don't know what's happening with their multiplayer technical test. I hope they don't just announce it right before, you know, during the weekend of PAX or something like that.
Yeah, that might happen.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm afraid it's going to happen, but hopefully we'll get to play it while we're there.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah.
But let's move on and talk about this Twitch news, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, did you guys see this? So basically, Twitch is adding the ability now for any streamer who's playing a game, there's going to be like a buy now button essentially underneath the game. So if you're playing, the example they showed was like, if you're playing Division, there'll be a button below it says like buy now. And it's using Amazon's sales engine, obviously.
Affiliate links or something?
To purchase. No, it's so the way the sales breakdown is working is that Twitch is going to take, I mean, the developer is going to take 70%. The streaming person is going to take 5%. And that's, then the,
isn't that less than Amazon affiliate marketing?
I don't know. And then the rest is feasibly going to Twitch. So the, from what I understand, what would be different about this in the Amazon affiliate network is that this is direct from the developers. So they're working with indie and AAA title developers. Like, I think they interviewed Telltale about it, and Telltale is and Double Fine, and like they're all going to be working basically direct. They're literally taking Steam kind of head on this one.
Oh, okay, I got it. That's cool.
Their press release kind of pointed out that one of their failures is that you know, basically, once you liked a game that you were watching, the only way for you to get it would be to leave and then go purchase it somewhere else. And you could use the Twitch launcher, of course, to download or whatever, but you couldn't really purchase through them, so they were losing money. And then they're selling this as like a new way for streamers to have some new revenue streams.
It's, I mean, it's possibly huge for streamers. If streamers, yeah, like some of these streamers that you know, get thousands upon thousands of views, especially when a new game comes out, they're going to make a lot of money, and they're going to be able to, you know, make an even better living than they already are. I don't think smaller streamers are really going to be impacted, like, like quality of lifestyle, you know, by this. Yeah. But I think some of the larger streamers, top tier, are, it's going to really make a huge difference for them. The only problem I see, and just playing devil's advocate, I think it's cool, I think it's a good idea, but I can also see the reason why people stream changing, right? Like right now people are streaming because, yeah, you can make money streaming, but most of the time it's because they like the games they're streaming. They enjoy that particular game, and the reason they're streaming is because they're having fun doing it, and then if there's the people viewing them like what they're doing, they'll get tips, right? But if you are playing something that you are selling, you may fake it a little bit more. So that's kind of the qualm that I have. Like, it may actually change the dynamic of Twitch.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not going to be as genuine. Everyone's going to become a car salesman and be like, oh, look at this. You know, For Honor's the best game I've ever played. Right. I'm loving it. You know, it's like,
I don't think I've ever seen any stream where somebody dislikes a game, to be honest with you. I don't know that I've ever seen someone stream a game they didn't like.
Right. Because they don't play them. Doesn't, if they're not having fun, they're not getting tips, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that I...
I had two thoughts on that. One goes towards what you're saying, which is that if they're working directly with developers, if this isn't an open system, and I might have read that wrong, maybe it is open in some way to get your game in there. Doesn't that kind of favor Twitch towards those games? Like, doesn't that mean that you'll probably see a lot more streams of, like, let's say For Honor, if they worked with them, like, happening over some of the other stuff that might be more niche, or that would happen otherwise, because it's a game that came out that they can talk about and play?
Absolutely. And it's exactly what's going to happen is you're going to see a lot of streamers playing these games that they can sell.
Yeah.
Because they want that extra cash. And, you know, I mean, it's just,
I mean, but it's just,
yeah, it's going to change the dynamic for a while until more developers get on board, and they will, like, you know, the selling your game on Twitch is a big thing. Like, developers will seek out streamers and, you know, kind of court streamers to play their games.
That was pretty much the marketing campaign for For Honor, is that Ubisoft just brought on like popular streamers to basically create like long form gameplay videos for each of the separate factions in the game. And that was kind of like the main thrust in that area. So absolutely.
Yeah. You have these personalities that already have built in audiences. Right. So it's like all the person has to do is start their stream, and they're already getting thousands of people to show up, and those thousands of people might tell their friends, and it just becomes a very viral type situation.
Yeah. The other thought I had was that this is sort of, I mean, not that they weren't already this, but you know, I don't go on Twitch a lot. I don't watch a ton of stuff, but I have found myself going on there on occasion and watching non-game stuff. And this definitely is kind of like a nod of like moving away from that. It feels like a little like definitively saying like, yeah, gaming is where we're at. This is not a social streaming network. You know, like, I have a feeling part of that's probably because I would assume Facebook eats that shit for lunch. Like, there's no way that Twitch is beating Facebook on like streams of somebody doing makeup tutorials or whatever. Mm-hmm. But But yeah, it just was interesting to me to, for them to be such a like definitive, like, oh, we're going to get in bed with developers. We're going to sell this stuff because we don't want it to go to Steam and we need this revenue kind of thing. So interesting, at least.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I guess we'll wait and see what happens in a couple years.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first game that we're going to talk about today is called The Inner World, which will come out on consoles March 31st. So we had an opportunity to look at a pre-release version of the game. So the game is, the developer is Studio Fizbin, and the publisher is Head Up Games. The Inner World is pretty much like in the, you know, style of classic 2D point-and-click adventure games from the, you know, LucasArts golden era mm-hmm. of point and click adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you guys are looking at the screenshots right now, but it's all hand drawn, sort of in the style of a quirky cartoon. But the thing that I will mention right off the bat, it's kind of more adult themed, and it's not necessarily the fact that it's got a lot of crude language, although it does have some. But it's just that the characters act like adults because they are adults, you know. So at times when they, you know, if somebody wants to call someone else a bitch, they'll do that. And if they want to, you know, kind of be crude in the way that they, you know, some of the characters are kind of like a little weird and racy. And the game is just overall quirky, but it is, I would say that it is definitely not a game for children or families. It's sort of a, you know, a game for the adult gamer, if you will, even though there aren't necessarily like any R-rated themes in the game, but that's kind of the spin on it right off the bat. Mm-hmm. The world of the game is pretty interesting. The game takes place in this realm called Esposia, which this whole culture lives inside of a giant dome. And the dome has three kind of like wind tunnels or ventilation shafts through which, you know, they get the air into the dome that they need in order to breathe. And so there are, you know, special individuals assigned to each of these wind tunnels, and the point at which you enter into the game is that the world is kind of one in which, you know, only one of those towers is functioning properly. And so like a lot of the world kind of lives in this poverty, and you play as this main character, Robert, who kind of serves as the almost like a kind of like an assistant to one of the what they call wind monks, people that kind of shepherd one of these towers. And then you kind of find yourself thrust into this conspiracy and into this wacky world and kind of dealing with all of the quirky things that happen with it and try to uncover what's happening and, you know, save the world, if you will.
It sounds actually really like, I like the premise of it quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, that's kind of why I wanted to mention that, like right off the bat, it's kind of more, you know, mature theme because it deals with like some kind of like societal topics, if you will. And it's right. Not just like, while the game is quirky and it is meant to be, you know, humorous throughout most of the game, it is definitely not just one of those point and click adventure games where you just kind of find your, you know, your weird character fumbling through most of the game and just completing puzzles that really don't make any sense. You know, you definitely have a purpose to what you're doing throughout the entire game. And, you know, I think what it does overall is that the narrative kind of does a really good job of tying everything together in a way that you don't always get with point and click adventure games, or sometimes you just kind of feel like you're going through the motions and you don't really know what's going to happen next and not really sure where the plot is going to go. And then it just kind of ends and you're like, oh, okay, well that was super bizarre. But, this game, you know, definitely gives you a mission right from the outset of the game. And, you know, as you discover things that are happening in the world around you, kind of adds some context to why you're setting out on your mission, which is really cool. The other thing that kind of stood out to me is that your main character, like the voice acting, the main character almost sounds like Rocco, you know, from of modern life fame, if you will.
Nice.
It's, you know, it's completely in my head, but every time I heard the character speak, I was like, oh, he kind of sounds like Rocco, and he kind of acts like him too, because he's, you know, at times can be a little absent-minded and not really aware of what his place is in the narrative. So that's cool too. The thing I always like to talk about with point and click adventure games, and we've, you know, brought this up on a very early episode, is sort of the nature of the puzzles in these games, which I like to kind of put on a scale from completely whimsical to completely practical. You know, so a practical puzzle would be like, here are three gears. You need these three gears to put them in the correct order that will start the machine. It's like, okay, like, right. I get that. That makes sense. On the other end of the spectrum, it's like, give the scarf to the monkey and he'll give you, you know, a blender, and you take the blender to the gorilla and he, you know, gives you a gold gem, and you're like, well, none of that made sense at all. Right. I would put this game kind of like somewhere in the middle, but at times leaning more towards the whimsical side.
But, okay.
I never felt like I didn't know what I had to do. And I never felt like I didn't know how to solve the puzzle. Sometimes it was just more of a situation in which, like, I really had to kind of think about what I had in my inventory and how at times I could repurpose items to help me meet my goal. So, you know, I think the puzzles are completely accessible, and I really feel like there was only one point in the game in which I felt completely lost and needed to get a little bit of help. But, that being said, if you play point and click adventure games, you kind of know that when you get lost, the best thing to do is kind of like click on everything, try to use, you know, every item with every other thing in the environment, or try to combine, you know, one item with every other thing in your inventory. So, that usually gets you back on the right path. But something they decided to do in this game, which I thought was really nice, is that they do provide like a fully complete help system. So if you really do get lost at any time, you can pull up the help system. It kind of shows you like what your objective is. And then if you start like pressing like, yes, I need help, it will actually just take you kind of line by line through like the logical progression of how you would solve the puzzle. So it's not even a thing in which they would just spoil it for you right off the bat. You know, like if, you know, the first thing you need to do in the game is to like kind of catch a bird. And so like, if you go for help on that issue, it won't just say like, oh, you need to use these items together and then do this. It kind of just says like, you need to get the bird down, but it won't come to you. And it's like, okay, I still don't get it. And it's like, maybe you can find something that will make the bird come down to you. And it's like, okay. And so it kind of like takes you through that,
right?
You know, yeah, through that logic.
Hold your hand a little bit.
Yeah. And then if you keep pressing the button, obviously at the end, it'll say like, okay, you just need to do this. And it's like, okay, fine. So, as far as like these kinds of games go, like I would put this on like a highly recommended list. I mean, I've played some in the past, you know, like what was that one? Armacrog, which I thought was like a little less accessible because the puzzles were just so kind of like esoteric that I thought it would be hard for people to get into it. But I feel like because the writing in this game is so good, the world is really kind of interesting, and the game is really not super long. I think you could complete the game in about 7 to 10 hours, which is kind of like right in the pocket for a game like this. So, that's The Inner World. I think you can pre-order it now. It might be available on some other platforms, but it comes to console on March 31st. And if you're kind of like hankering for a classic point and click adventure game, this would be the one, to play, at least, you know, as far as what's available right now. The last thing I'll also quickly say about the game is that the controls take a little bit of getting used to, but once I got used to them, I actually found them to be really helpful. The only thing that might put people off right away is that, you know, these games are kind of made for touch, or they're made for mouse and keyboard, right? Where you're supposed to be able to click on things. That's why they're called point and click adventures. But obviously with a controller, you only have like kind of two options for how to handle that. The first is to kind of put a mouse cursor on the screen, and which you would control with a thumbstick, which is what Armacrog did, and I didn't think was very effective. This game kind of goes the route of you can move your character around with the thumbstick, and in order to interact with things, you need to get to the hotspot and then activate it. But they actually put a button on the controller that just like shows you where all the hotspots are, which I think is really nice. It's not like a help system thing. It's just how the game is made. So you basically just activate all of the hotspots, you pick the one that you want to use, and then you decide what, you know, what action to take with the hotspot. It takes a little bit of getting used to because it's kind of different. I would expect to kind of walk up to something and hit the A button to interact with it. But once you get used to that system, the game like flows like butter, and I definitely think everyone should give it a try, especially if you're a fan of point and click adventure games. So that is The Inner World.
Cool. So Ghost Recon Wildlands had a technical test / open beta this past weekend. This is an Ubisoft joint. I don't know which part of the French land this particular Ubisoft title is. Maybe I should have looked it up, but I didn't.
I'll look it up while you're talking.
Thanks, man. But so this is an open world action adventure title where you play the role of special operatives trying to take down drug cartel in Bolivia. And it has a robust character creation and four-player co-op and drivable vehicles and collectible guns and a whole world to explore and to blow up.
Okay, you want that info?
Yeah, which Ubisoft joint?
So this one is going to be Ubisoft Paris.
Oh, really?
Who has made... The last game in this vein that they made was Watch Dogs 1. They made Assassin's Creed Pirates, which I think was a mobile game.
Okay.
They make the Just Dance games. They made Ghost Recon Future Soldier. Mm-hmm. Rayman Origins. They do all the Just Dance titles. And Tom Clancy's N-War, which was that 2009 game, I think, that used the microphone for the first time.
Yeah, I actually own that game. It was pretty fun.
There you go.
Remember shouting at my TV.
I played it at your house, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think we may have. Yelling stuff. So I'll start off with the things that I liked about Ghost Recon. I did like the character creation. I felt like there was a whole lot to choose from. They went the route of, rather than having sliders for your character, they just let you choose heads, which was similar to The Division. I feel like the models were also similar in quality to The Division. The Division, I think, maybe were a little bit more advanced than the models in Ghost Recon Wildlands, but I think the level of quality was still there. There's a lot of different layers to, you know, armor pieces, and you could get really, really, really finicky if you wanted to. And there were a lot of options straight out of the gate in terms of, you know, what do you want your baklava to look like? What do you want your backpack to look like? You know, do you want a headscarf? Do you want, like, you know, one red wristband and one blue wristband? So you could go totally crazy.
That was like a lot of customization for like little benefit, I feel like.
Oh yeah, like none of it really did anything. Well,
there was no benefit, right? Yeah,
let's go with zero benefit. Yeah,
yeah. So you could equip different goggles and stuff like that, and none of it really did anything. So
yeah,
that's sort of a both, I guess, a positive and a negative. There's a ton of gear, but the gear wasn't statted. So it wasn't like The Division where you're picking up different armor pieces and flak jackets and all of it does different stuff, which is good and bad. Things I liked, I do like open world stuff. And I like the idea that you can tackle different enemy headquarters any way that you want, or different enemy camps any way that you want. Even playing briefly with Scott, we got to do some fun co-op stuff, and we got to work on different tactics. Like at one point, he tried to drop me off on top of a water tower so I could snipe, and that's really cool. You know, we were in a helicopter, and later on, we had to learn to parachute, which was really fun. But, you know, I don't know. There's something, you know, just kind of fun about running around and causing trouble in these games. I think where my problems begin is that I've done it all before, right? Mm-hmm. Starting back with Mercenaries.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, I feel really good.
Yeah, right.
Like, high bar to cross.
And over the top and kind of crazy, right? But we have games like Just Cause, we have Mercenaries, we have Far Cry, you have GTA 5, and all of these are great. Yeah, great open world games where you can cause a lot of trouble with a whole lot of gear and a whole lot of weapons. So what makes Ghost Recon Wildlands stand out? The honest answer is I don't know at this point from the technical test. I wasn't all that excited about what narrative I did see. I wasn't that blown away by the quality of the voice work either, which I normally wouldn't even say on the show, but it actually stuck out to me where I was like, oh, like they didn't really go for like the best voice talent with this cast, because
kind of flat, you know, right?
Yeah, the scene opens with them in a helicopter, kind of going for like a Predator type moment with all these like badasses telling each other stories and kind of telling each other jokes. Only it was like, you know, if you got like, you know, your dad and his three buddies to like sit down and tell you war stories, and it's just like it doesn't have the same gravitas as like actual voice actors would deliver with the role. So I found that to be a little bit disappointing. And you know, I'm kind of a VO nerd, so I was like, oh, they just didn't. And it might have not been the actor's fault. It was more likely a, you know, a lack of direction. Other stuff that kind of bothered me. I have a standard, very old day one launch Xbox One, and this game chugs on my Xbox One, at least in the technical test. It was really, 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 like, I saw a lot of frame rate issues. I felt like a lot of the combat, when things got dicey, everything kind of, I don't want to say there was slow down, but you could definitely see that, you know, I was dropping frames and the action wasn't necessarily smooth or fluid. And when a game like Far Cry 4, which came out at this point, you know, a couple years ago, has those giant bombastic open world combat, you know, fight moments that are, you know, crystal clear and just beautiful, like you're like, oh man, like what's going on with this? So I don't know if it was because it was a, you know, a tech test or a beta, but that's definitely the feeling that I got. And I'm like, well, maybe I need, you know, a 1S, or maybe I need to like wait for the Scorpio to play this. I don't know.
1S was fine for me. I don't know about Scott.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, I had it as well, and I remember you saying that you were seeing performance.
But you had problems as well, Scott?
I didn't. And I was streaming it as well. So, you know, I mean, like, not streaming it online, but in home streaming, you know, to a computer. So, I didn't notice it, and I don't think that streaming takes away so much of the quality that I wouldn't have noticed it if it was a problem. So I don't know, maybe it has something to do with the older system. That'd be possible. I mean, but
they would deny that such a thing exists, but I told you guys I'd had my wife's newer version like literally sitting next to mine and loading games, and hers would load faster things would look a little bit different. I'm like, oh, so there's definitely different hardware in an Xbox day one edition than some of these newer versions of the Xbox. So
I can also tell you that I'm running the alpha ring of the new UI experience, which takes away the snap feature. So basically, like, you know, there's only one app running at any given time other than background music. So that might have...
Oh, Snap was so stupid, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people...
Well, it wasn't stupid. It just was like so... We're going to get off topic.
Some people like it, you know, because you were able to watch TV while you were playing a game. But, you know, ultimately...
I didn't like it for that. I liked it for like party stuff. It just was such a clunk. It was so clunky the way they did it.
Right.
Yeah. But anyways, that may have factored into the frame rate thing as well.
I went on a tangent too a little bit about Wildlands, but let's talk to Scott about your initial impressions and kind of what you felt about the game.
Yeah. I mean, like, I kind of feel the same way you do, that I've done this many times before, you know, like, especially me having played like all the Assassin's Creed titles and doing all of Watch Dogs 1 and all of Watch Dogs 2. You know, so doing a game like this, it's like, I know what I'm getting into, and it just kind of boils down to the decision of, like, do I want to spend all this time, you know, collecting every single little thing on the map and completing the missions and stuff like that. And so, you know, what kind of makes that a positive experience is that it's fun to kind of run around in the jungle, and it's fun to fly planes and helicopters, and like, we had a lot of fun playing together.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, like, things that would have been otherwise frustrating were fun in co-op, which was, you know, there are missions scattered throughout the map in which you can get a huge boost to your resources by, it's typically like stealing, you know, an airplane or stealing like a cargo helicopter. And the thing that we had to learn is that as soon as you aggro those enemies, like, somebody runs straight to the helicopter and then flies it away, and there's no way for you to like stop them from doing it, because apparently the helicopters are like completely impenetrable, at least in the beta build. So,
Did you guys not crash any helicopters?
No, I'm saying like the guy would.
Oh, like get, you can't blow them out of the sky.
He would, no, but he would like get into the helicopter seat, and I would fire directly into the cockpit and he would just like fly it away, you know? So it's like, oh, it's all bulletproof glass or whatever. So so we had to replay that mission 4 times, but I feel like every time we replayed it, we kind of discussed the strategy and how we were going to approach it. And at one point we tried to like ride in on a vehicle that had like a minigun mounted to it, but there was a technical issue that made that non-functional. But ultimately that was kind of like planning out how to complete that mission ended up being a lot of fun because we were, you know, learning and discovering things as we were going along, right. And that made it fun. That being said, the single player experience I feel like is a little more clinical because your teammates basically just are there to help you, right? Like if you fall down, they'll pick you back up again. And if you know, the way it's interesting how the combat situations work. If you're in a combat situation and you go down, they'll revive you one time. If you fall again, then the game's over and you have to start again, at least on the difficulty level that I was playing on. So, that's interesting. They do help you. They do fire at enemies. They're most effective when you're in a vehicle and you tell them to kind of like hop out the windows and start shooting at people. Like that's really kind of cool. Like that kind of stuff is cool. The stuff that kind of turns me off of the game is the tone of the narrative. Like it's so serious. And, you know, if it were up to me, every game would be, you know, open world games would be like Watch Dogs 2 and Sunset Overdrive and, Mercenaries 2, where like, it's more of like a romp, you know, like you're just kind of out right. there having fun, causing trouble and stuff like that. And this game at times takes itself very seriously. And it's like, okay, I get it, Ubisoft, like the world's a terrible place. Like we're all, you know, everybody needs to be like a super special forces person, right. and we're gonna like right all the wrongs.
I feel like this tone of this game is very very a couple years ago. Like I feel like a couple years ago when
it's probably when they started the game,
right? No, like I feel like this like every game was this, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when you know Call of Duty was coming out with Modern Warfare and things of that nature. Every game was like a hardcore tactical shooter with like badass Green Beret operatives, you know, and and I think in the past year or two we've really kind of moved away from that. We're getting games with a lot, you know, tonally that are a lot more easygoing than this game.
Well, I know I keep talking about it, but just like look at their last game, Watch Dogs 2. It's like you're like this hipster hacker guy and you're taking down like fake Google and fake, you know, fake like, you know, Silicon Valley companies, and you know, you're tagging buildings and you're controlling cranes and just kind of blowing stuff up. And it's just meant to be lighthearted and fun. And it's like, you know, I'd rather play another one of that, but like, it's just the, you know, if the tone of the game were a little brighter, if the characters were kind of like, I don't know, more lighthearted in what they were doing, I could probably get into this game a little bit more. But
right.
You know, in the beta that they had two areas to explore. One was like a really like super hard difficulty area, which I didn't get to, and then this like, you know, 1-star difficulty area, which was meant to be like the starter area. And I completed the storyline in that area, and I collected like 97% of the collectibles in this area, and I was like, wow. And then I pulled back and looked at the map, and it's like there's 21 zones of that, and I can't imagine doing what I just did, you know, in the beta period 20 more times, like in this world of like really sad, angry people like trying to overthrow this like drug cartel or whatever. It's like I can't get into it, you know.
Well, like how many cartel agents can you shoot, right, without some narrative to kind of push you forward? Because that's the thing. So, like I didn't really get a sense of character or anything like that from the beta. Like mm-hmm. who was I, like what was I doing? Like that wasn't really apparent to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, can I go?
Sorry, jump on in. Yeah, I kind of like left it open for you. Yeah.
I complained plenty about this on Slack, but and I won't just shit on the game. I actually think there was some positives to the game. I actually think it's pretty gorgeous. They did a really good job with the world. I think the frame rate issues you're seeing, Ash, are probably, it looks like it renders forever. Like it looks like it's just rendering everything in front of you. So I have a feeling that they're doing a ton of background work in the game while you're running through it, which might have chugged your system a little bit. But so you guys touched on it, and I really think this is I have two main complaints about this game that I don't think are likely to be addressed you know, between now and, isn't this coming out in like 2 weeks or something?
It comes out the week of PAX, I think Tuesday, I want to say Tuesday, yeah. The 12th maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That stands out in my head, something like that.
The first is that you guys are kind of touching all around it, which is that this game comes out of, and to these games' credits, like Splinter Cell is one of my favorite series of all time. Rainbow Six is one of my most favorite tactical games. This brand puts out a lot of stuff that I love. And I actually played a ton of the Ghost Recon on 360 because all my coworkers played it. I don't remember which Ghost Recon it was, but it was
Future Soldier.
Ghost Recon, yeah. Something. Yeah, maybe Future Soldier. And it was fun. It was like a much more fun thing. But this game like half does what all of their other games do, right? But doesn't do any of them super well.
Oh, yeah, like a jack of all trades.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like it's got like sort of some of the tacticalness of Rainbow Six, but it's pretty rough around the edges as far as how tactical you can get in solo with your team. It's sort of got like, I guess, a narrative like Splinter Cell would have, but the narrative's pretty paper thin. And then I think the dark part of it, what you're feeling, and I know I made a joke about this and I won't make the same joke on the podcast, but like, I think what you're feeling is that they set this in a real place with like real kind of people and things around it, like, which is a weird,
it does feel very
thing
real
to do all of a sudden when you're like, no, you're in the forest just murdering people. You're like, oh, okay, what did they do? They're like, well, he works for a gang lord, so shoot him in the face. And you're like, oh, that feels weird. Like it takes a really dark turn when you put something in a real country, like in a real place with real people, and like populate the town with like regular town folk walking around. Like,
yeah, you do run into these little villages where people are kind of just going about their business, their daily lives, and you're kind of running into somebody's like abandoned building and shooting everybody inside just to get like an attachment for your AK or whatever. Like,
I hear there's a scope in here.
it's just such a bizarre thing to do, and it feels like it's uncomfortable feeling, honestly, at the end of the day. And like the difference between this and like The Division was, The Division, while dark and brooding, was like comic booky in its dark and broodingness, right? Like, it was set in New York, sure, but the people you were fighting were like comic book villains that had like unleashed themselves upon New York.
And they were
clearly
clearly evil. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
clearly like causing trouble, like injuring other people, like the characters
standing around in the street talking to each other.
That's what the characters in this game are doing. Like, a lot of them are just kind of like hanging out in their houses.
I stumbled upon a group that was like playing poker, and I like murdered them all, and I was like, this is just weird. Like, they were doing nothing wrong at this moment in time, and I like roll in and just shoot them all for no reason whatsoever. So it's very odd to do that in an open world with like no narrative. Like, I feel like if you do this kind of real world, you know, heavy setting, like, you need a narrative that is like pointed, straight, very like clear cut, and not like, oh, drive around and do whatever you feel like doing, because it takes just an odd turn when you're allowed to like drive to some remote part of some village and there's like a house there and the map tells you these guys are bad, so you're like, okay, and you just like kill them all. Like, it's very odd.
That's the thing, right? Is that like, I think in that zone alone, I want to say there were 6 missions, right? And every mission kind of was like, hey, we got some intel that there's a bad dude in this building. Like, he might lead us to the people that we're trying to get. And it's like, okay. And then you go there and you kill them and you get the intel, and it's like, okay, now I think we know where these people are. Let's go kill them. Okay, that's great. But again, do that 20 more times. There's 21 zones in the game. Yeah. Like, how many times can you say that over and over again? Oh, this is a bad dude over here. You got to go get him. It's like, oh, geez, come on.
Yeah.
No, and then my tricky
mission variety, you know, like, I'm worried. Like, even if you're into that kind of like, oh, I'm a special forces dude, like, my fear is that there's going to be very little mission variety, which you can't do a lot of that in a serious game, because when you have a silly game like a Sunset Overdrive, you can have a mission which is like, hey, jump on the roller coaster and like kill this, you know, surf on the roller coaster and kill this weird guy who's dressed in like a chainmail or something, right? You just can't do that in a game like this,
right? And then the last thing I would say, and this is not something that's only a sin of this game, but it's, I think Ubisoft does it a lot more than a lot of other companies, it's just a weird thing that pisses me off, which is that so the conceit of this game is that they are dropping you and three other people into like the worst area in Bolivia or whatever to take out this drug lord. And it's like you and three guys are gonna, you're gonna handle everything in this forest. And then they're like, but then, and they're like, you're such a badass. You're the greatest. You're the biggest, most badass special op ever. Drop you in the forest. Here's a shitty gun. You have no abilities. Go play for 15 hours before you're allowed to like do anything of any sort of fun in the game. And it's just like, it's so bizarre to be told that you're such a badass and then land and be like I actually legitimately was confused for, I would say the first hour of playing why I couldn't mark more than one guy at a time.
Oh,
I was
like you could in like a Splinter Cell or something.
Yeah, I was like, I'd mark one, and then I was like trying to mark the next, and it was the engage button all of a sudden, and I was like, well, there's four guys here. Why can't I? There's four of us. Why don't I mark three of them, and I'll take out the other guy.
I think the max is three. And just looking at the skill tree,
Well, but you can mark three and then shoot. You can aim, and when you fire, supposedly the other three will take out the other three. Yeah. But like, but to get to that, that's three skill point levels, isn't it?
Well, I think like actually it's probably closer to five. It's probably closer to five because once you unlock the first, like higher skills cost more points. So yeah, you'll hit that. I think
it's just such a
that's the limiter. Yeah,
it's just such a it's like such a weird. It just weirds me out. Like, not that you shouldn't have to earn things in games. Like you should clearly need to like level up and earn things. I'm trying to think of like a good example. I know somebody's done it recently that I really enjoyed where they dropped you into a game. It might have was a Division. No, it wasn't Division.
No, but
where they dropped you.
I remember we did play a game recently where you kind of started with like half of your abilities instead of none of them. I know that Mirror's Edge did that, like because a lot of people were already familiar with the old game. Like they basically like gave you, you know, 40 to 50% of your old abilities and then gave you kind of like some old and new things to build from.
And I think there's got to be a balance. And I think the reason it sticks out in this game more than others possibly is that the whole narrative of the game is that you are an amazing special ops person. You're so good that they're going to drop you with four people and you're going to take care of this entire situation in this country. It's just like it's an odd narrative way to like drop you into a game and then be like, but at the same time, you're not really good at anything yet. Like you're capable with a gun if you're already capable with a gun in gaming. And then beyond that, like you got nothing. You
know? I think the best way to handle that would be just to give you, you know, 5 to 10 skill points for like right off the bat and be like, you invest these however you want. Because I think, I mean, just looking at the skill trees, you're probably going to need like 100 points to unlock everything, if not more.
Oh,
so what's five, you know, what's five going to be? Like, I know, for example, in Watch Dogs 2, there was a club reward that you could unlock, which gave you like 6 points to start with. That was just enough to unlock a couple of abilities right off the start. So it kind of gets you a head start into the game and made you feel like you could do something. Other than, because, you know, what the problem, like you're saying, with all these games is that, like, the only thing you can do to start out is shoot, right?
Right.
And then what we always say about these games is that, like, once you unlock that ability, you know, like in Borderlands, once you unlock like your first ability, once you, you know, get your first gadget in the Division, once you get your first like ability to kind of fly in Sunset Overdrive, then the game opens up. But like, how long do you have to play this game before you feel like you're actually doing something other than just like doing a cover based shooter, right? That's the issue.
So, I mean, it was good. The only other note I would give it, there was some stuff that I actually did enjoy. I thought the shooting was great. Some of the guns were fine that I played with. The only other note that I give it that was a very interesting thing. So I played it with two non-gaming people who were hanging out in the living room, like doing other stuff while I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Melissa and our friend Tierney. And both of them said the same thing, which was interesting. They both went, oh, this game's really pretty. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, man, that's like... this is a game? Like, that's crazy. It looks really good. I was like, yeah, it looks really good. And then we would sit there for a while, and I'd be, you know, in a car just driving for 10 minutes or something. And Melissa, I think, was the first one. She went, why isn't there any music?
I went,
what? She was like, there's no sound. And I was like, I hadn't thought about it at that moment. And then I was like, well, I mean, you're running around in the forest. Like, there isn't music, you know.
Yeah, there's no score. Like, really. Yeah.
but then I thought about it some more and I was like, oh, that's like adding to this realness kind of feel to it, which again we've already covered, like makes it feel even weirder that it's that real feeling. But we were doing that and then she just went, this is boring. And I was like, yeah. Oh, geez. Like, it just was like, just out with it. And then I kept playing for a while. And then I eventually got kind of bored of it, too, for reasons that I think you guys touched
on. Driving in that game after playing Forza, man,
that's
agonizing because the car physics aren't great. So
I did learn that I should not pilot a helicopter in real life ever in my life.
It's a little tricky to figure out in this game for some reason.
I flew it into the ground. I ran into a mountain. I was laughing while I was doing it, but it was just like, it was ridiculous what was happening inside of the helicopter. But I mean, like, I could see it being fun. I don't think it's for me at the end of the day. There was just stuff that I was like, ugh, this is not this. It felt grindy and it felt just like I didn't get to co-op, which I'm sure is where it shines. But it just was, yeah, I don't know. It turned me off in a lot of ways. So, yeah.
I mean, if I could be completely honest, like for all of us, I think, and I mean, I'm not speaking for you guys, but what I'm saying is that, like, if we were all to play this game together, we would have a blast. And co-op is where it's at with this game. Just
sure.
Even just playing with Ash, I was like, I can see how this is a blast. What's really going to happen is that we're all going to pick up Mass Effect.
Yeah.
If somewhere over the summer this game goes on super sale for like $30 to $45 and we have nothing else to do, maybe we'll get it. But, you know, again, there's plenty of other games that do that allow us to play co-op.
Sure.
And we can have a lot of fun playing. So I don't know that we ever be able to get to this one, even though it has a lot of promising features too. It's just maybe a little too serious for us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, it's like if we were to spend our co-oping time, like I would love to get back into Overwatch again, or Forza. Like, yeah, drive around. We've yet to like all get in a group and drive around together. So you guys summed it up well, and hopefully, you know,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, like Scott said, I think it's fun. It's just you know, it's got some rough edges right now.
Yeah,
it's a game.
Yeah, indeed. Cool. Well, I think that's it. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
We did it. Show notes up anymore. We did it. Yay! Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 261 of the Rated NA podcast. If you want to shoot us an email about anything at all, you can email Matt, Scott, or Ash at nerdappropriate.com. Or if you have a general question or comment, you can send it to nerds@nerdappropriate.com. We're, of course, on Twitter, and that is at nerdappropriate on Twitter, /Facebook. /Facebook/nerdappropriate on Facebook, and /nerdappropriate on Twitch TV as well.
Change my gamer tag to Facebook.
So you should do that.
/Facebook.
And we will be at PAX in a couple weeks, so definitely look for us there. Say hi, and we'll probably have one more show before we head that way. So look for that one as well.
Cool.
You be /Facebook, I'll be /Facebook.
Sounds good. And Ash can be @Facebook.
@Facebook.
That's good.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Later. Let me walk down the stairs.
You a horse? Did you grow horse legs while we were gone?
Guys, look out. There's a bat.
That's a pretty good bat. That's not a bad bat.
Thanks.
Good. Yeah. The walking was, you went straight horse for a minute there.